This is the Thursday, September 28th oral argument calendar. First case is State versus Hecht. You may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Donald Powell on behalf of Mr. Hecht, who is present in the courtroom. This is, may it please the court, this is a case.
Did you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I would. I would like to save 3 minutes. If I
3 minutes.
Thank you.
All right. You may proceed.
Thank you. This is a case about whether the state should be allowed to take something from a criminal defendant when there has been no conviction and he's therefore presumed innocent. They took from Mr. Hecht his position as an elected judge, his career as a lawyer, his freedom requiring him to do community supervision, and his freedom by requiring him to do community service. He basically also took his entire emotional welfare, Your Honor. Your Honors, to allow a defendant to have the state exact these items from him when there's no conviction, where he's presumed innocent, and where the reason why they chose not to retry him was that they got the results as if there was a conviction. It's entirely appropriate under Nelson versus Colorado and under RAP 12.6, or excuse me, 12 point, all of a sudden the central rule.
12.8.
Thank you.
Is Nelson versus Colorado in your brief?
No, but it was submitted as additional materials. It came down just at the time. I didn't even know about it after I filed my brief, after I filed my reply brief. And yet we think it's dispositive of this case. The court there very much based upon the presumption of innocence that arises from an overturned conviction, makes a finding that the state can impose nothing more than minimal procedures. That's the court's language. And the exact quote from the actual ruling in the last couple of paragraphs of the opinion is, you can require nothing more than minimal procedures on the refund of exactions dependent upon a conviction subsequently invalidated. So the question arises, well...
And what was at issue in that case then?
The issue in that case
type
were,
of relief that
were
the,
fines and restitution. There were two cases out of Colorado, fines and restitution that were paid by criminal defendants, and then those convictions were overturned, and there was no subsequent retrial. So they sought a refund of the fines and the restitution, and the United States Supreme Court said it's clearly a matter of 14th Amendment constitutional rights, basic due process constitutional rights.
But you're seeking beyond that, though.
I don't
really,
believe
you're seeking
are.
Is beyond that. I mean, you're more than fines and restitution, right?
Well,
I mean, if you got fines and at least you got some of the right. Financial obligations were refunded.
That's correct. A very small portion of them, yes, $2,050 was refunded. What the trial judge...
What funds that he actually paid to the state was not refunded to you?
$250 for a John school.
Okay, and who was that paid to?
That was paid to the John school.
Okay, that was not paid to the state.
But it's no different than what's in Nelson versus Colorado with regard to restitution paid to a third party. And it's still the state of Washington imposing its power.
But that was paid to the alleged victim in that case, though, right?
That's correct. So I think our case is even stronger in that sense. It's not some third-party victim or alleged victim of a crime, although there is no crime when your conviction's been overturned. but it's a provider that the court normally employs and sends their convicted criminals to.
Did you indicate that you had filed a statement of supplemental authority for this case?
No, but the state did, and I didn't think it was necessary for me to add it a second time.
All right. Okay. Let me, as the clock is ticking,
sure.
Let me ask you about, the state spends a lot of its brief talking about the fact that this is not an appeal as a matter of right. Did you want to respond to that argument?
Well, I don't know. If it's not an appeal of a matter of right, that means... The argument would therefore be that a trial court can render a ruling that's dispositive of the issues raised, and you have no right of appeal. Excuse me, keep it in there. And that just seems to me to be as despotic as it can be. How can you have no appeal rights? It's hardly even worth responding to, in my opinion. It's as fascist as it comes to say a trial court has no responsibility to the Court of Appeals or the Supreme Court and can render its rulings without any form of challenge. So
Your brief, you talk a lot about how the dismissal order without prejudice was entered ex parte. How does that affect your analysis? I'm not sure I understood that from your brief.
Well, I think it's twofold. Number one, it demonstrates, number one, in our opinion, the bias of the judge. And we think that on remand we should get a new judge. But number two, it demonstrates that there was an effort here to avoid dealing with the mandates of 12.8, and that was a conscious decision by the state to try to sidestep what would normally occur when there's a hearing and you're discussing not retrying an overturned conviction. Obviously, what would come up at that point is 12.8. The third item about that is it was without prejudice. Okay, so by entering that order without prejudice, you're further placing the defendant in a position where if he seeks the 12.8 remedy, he may, in fact, then result in being retried.
So is your argument that Mr. Heck should have been afforded an opportunity to appear at the hearing and say, Your Honor, number one, it should have been with prejudice, and number two, I think in the briefing you talk about an evidentiary hearing on the restitution issue.
Yes. Yes.
Why wasn't that request made? It looks like email was sent to the appellate counsel saying, here's the order we're going to enter and so
right.
forth.
If you'll notice from that first line in the appellate counsel's response is, I don't represent him on that. I can't promise you anything about, I'm not counsel of record on that, and don't expect me to have any authority to approve that order.
But the state couldn't have communicated with him directly, right, because that was the only lawyer he had, as I understood.
Well,
otherwise it would have been an ethical violation, wouldn't it?
He's only precluded from contacting an attorney who represents him on the matter being addressed. The RPC is pretty clear on that. If you're not represented on issue B, but you are represented on issue A, you can't contact him on issue A, but you can contact him on issue B, and it could have at least mailed him a basic notice.
All right, you'll have 3 minutes in rebuttal. Thank you.
That was quick.
Good morning. May it please the Court, John Hillman for the State of Washington. And the State, as indicated, first is asking the Court to find that Mr. Hecht has no right of appeal in this case.
What would give him a right to appeal in the State's view?
There isn't one. I mean,
so you're saying that if anyone ever wanted to ask for restitution under 12.8, it's not an appealable order as a defendant?
No, but they certainly have a right to petition the court for discretionary review. But as the Supreme Court has said repeatedly, RAP 2.2A, the 13 things that are listed there, that is the exclusive list of things that are appealable as a matter of right for a criminal defendant. And there's only two of those that could possibly apply here. One is that if Judge Casey's ruling 2 years after the case was dismissed that Mr. Hecht gets his LFOs back but none of these other civil-type damages, that is a final judgment. And
what would have happened if Judge Casey had agreed with the defense and ordered $1 million+? Would the state not have had a right to appeal that?
You know, I would have to go through the criteria, but no. I mean, the state could certainly ask for discretionary review and persuade the court that this is an issue that the court should review, but no.
All right.
And, you know, at the outset, you know, we're here on a case involving crimes that were alleged to have occurred 9 or 10 years ago, a case that was tried 8 years ago and has been dismissed for over 3 years. And the court should be clear on what Mr. Hecht is asking for. If his argument is followed to its logical conclusion, every time a criminal case is reversed on appeal and the state declines to retry it, under his analysis, that entitles the defendant to compensation for emotional distress, lost wages, lost future wages, attorney fees, and any other negative consequence that he can attribute to the prosecution. And under that argument, it doesn't matter what the reason for the reversal is. It could be an error evidentiary ruling by the trial court, an erroneous jury instruction, ineffective assistance of counsel, error in closing argument, juror misconduct. It wouldn't matter under his analysis. And it also wouldn't matter under his analysis why the state declined to retry the case after it was reversed.
What if the state had said, and I understand that's not your position here, what if the state had said, Your Honor, new evidence has come to light. We believe that individual X was wrongfully convicted, therefore we're not seeking retrial on this matter.
Well, the legislature 2 years ago passed a statute that directly addresses that situation, where if a case is reversed for newly discovered evidence, the defendant is entitled to compensation for any time that he spent in prison or on community custody, provided that that's the reason why the case was reversed and that he can prove his actual innocence. That's another very important part of that, the Wrongfully Convicted Persons Act, which is found at RCW 4.100. We don't have any of those circumstances here. That's not something that Mr. Hecht is entitled to because his case was not reversed based on newly discovered evidence, and he never served a day in jail or prison. But as I was saying, you know, under his argument, you know, if you follow it to its logical conclusion, it doesn't even matter why the case was reversed or why the state declined to retry the case, which happens for all kinds of reasons, especially when there's a passage of time. There could be missing witnesses. There could be a lack of resources at that time, or there could it could simply be an act of mercy in a case where the defendant's own actions have cost him his career and his reputation. He's already served his sentence, and a second trial is not going to accomplish anything. But turning to the merits of the state's claim that he has no right to appeal, again, there's only two possibilities, RAP 2.2A1. He's entitled to appear a final judgment, but the court's case law is clear that a final judgment is one that decides all the issues in a case. This ruling by Judge Casey 2 years after the case was dismissed clearly did not do that. The central issue in State of Washington versus Michael Hecht was, is there evidence that proves beyond a reasonable doubt that he's guilty of patronizing a prostitute and felony harassment? Many other issues, but that's the central issue, and certainly Judge Casey's ruling 2 years later after it was dismissed was not a final judgment. The only other possible criteria in RAP 2.2A would be subsection 13, which is...
Does it become a final judgment if the dismissal is without prejudice and the statute of limitations is run so that re-prosecution is barred?
No, because again, you know, this is State of Washington versus Michael Hecht, and a ruling on costs 2 years after dismissal does not finally settle all of the issues in the case. You know, if the statute of limitations runs, that prevents the state from recharging him and reconvicting him, but it never settled the central issue of the original case, which is whether or not he's guilty. The only other criteria would be if Judge Casey's ruling 2 years after the dismissal was a final order after judgment. But again, this court's case law is clear that an order dismissing a criminal case is not a final judgment, and accordingly, an order subsequent to that cannot be
an order dismissing a criminal case without prejudice. Is
correct.
Not a final judgment.
Correct.
This was dismissed without prejudice, but then the statute of limitations ran, and so what's the difference between that and a dismissal with prejudice?
Well, at the time that Judge Casey ruled, there still was some statute of limitations, at least on the felony harassment. Mr. Hecht, in the state's opinion, engaged in blatant witness tampering during the trial. That was probably still something the state could charge at that time. But, you know, so I think we should look at the case at the time that Judge Casey ruled on it, which at the time there was still a statute of limitations and it was an order without prejudice. And under the state or the court's case law, that is not final judgment.
But as we sit here today, there's no disagreement that the statute of limitations has run.
I would agree with that, yes.
Did you want to comment about the recusal motion and the argument that the appellant raises on that?
Yes, you know, Judge Casey presided over this trial. I think we charged the case in February of 2009. It was tried in October of 2009. Mr. Hecht was sentenced in 2009, so he made countless discretionary rulings during that time. And then subsequent to that, Mr. Hecht kept coming before Judge Casey arguing that he was indigent, and I don't know how many times Judge Casey denied that, but finally Mr. Hecht got to a point where he was receiving some sort of public assistance, and the court agreed that he was at least partially indigent. But the case law, the court knows this, you know, if you've made a discretionary ruling, you're not entitled to an affidavit of prejudice.
Right.
Obviously, recusal is slightly different. Mr. Hecht made that argument at the post-dismissal motion, and his argument was that the transcript of the sentencing proceeding reflected bias on the part of Judge Casey. When Judge Casey considered that argument 2 years after the dismissal, he said, I reviewed the transcript, and I made some comments about the defendant's guilt, which would be typical of any sentencing judge at a sentencing hearing. And although I didn't allow Mr. Hecht's family to speak, that's not an uncommon practice of mine, depending on the particular case and how much time is involved, and that none of those things caused him to believe that he couldn't be fair. And Judge Casey had discretion to do that, and I don't think that there's anything in the record that's before this court that shows he abused his discretion in doing that. Just in my last 2 minutes here, just turning to the merits of Mr. Hecht's claims, even if the court decided he has a right to appeal. RAP 12.8 provides that if a party has satisfied a trial court decision, which is modified by the appellate court, the court shall enter orders to restore property or, in appropriate circumstances, restitution. And I would ask the court to focus on that phrase, trial court decision, because the only relevant trial court decision that was modified by this court's opinion reversing his conviction that's relevant here were the LFOs that were paid as part of his sentence, and those have been returned to Mr. Hecht. And so under the RAP, there's two things that the trial court can do on remand: restore property that was taken from Mr. Hecht, or, if appropriate, award restitution. And in this case, the only property that was taken from Mr. Hecht were the LFOs that the Superior Court clerk collected, and those have all been returned to him. With respect to restitution, Washington state law is crystal clear that in criminal cases, only the legislature can authorize restitution. And except for cases of self-defense, our legislature has never authorized restitution for a criminal defendant.
Well, that would be restitution. Well, the law is clear. I agree that the statute for the trial court to order restitution to a victim, it has to be done by statute. But this is an appellate rule which seems to be equitable in nature. Isn't it arguably broader than that?
It's written broader, but again, you know, court rules like statute should be interpreted to avoid absurd consequences, which the state has outlined and which I commented on at the beginning. And it just, in the state's opinion, would be an absurd consequence for the court to adopt a court rule that's directly contrary to its own case law.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors. The state's protection here is to do the retrial. All I have to do is do the retrial, and then this whole thing goes away. So the state is not...
Pardon me, but I really don't understand that argument. Well, why would your client want to be retried instead of having the case dismissed?
He thought he would be acquitted, I guess. I mean, the point is that you're entitled to the presumption of innocence. And the way the state protects itself against a restitution request is to retry the defendant. Counsel's argument that somehow the state is being imposed upon here when it makes its choice to retry, not retry, and when the grounds given for the not retrying are that they obtain the results of the conviction. That's what's so offensive here. That's what makes 12.8 as appropriate in this case, is that they have given as their reasons that we got what we wanted as if there was a conviction. If you look at Judge Alito's concurring opinion, he spends some time talking about the fact that this ruling in Nelson versus Colorado is in fact opening the constitutional, not just state appellate court rule, but on a constitutional level, the issue of restitution to the status quo ante. Before the state used its power, what did the state exact from you? And you have a right to that on minimal procedures. And one comment about Judge Casey. At the hearing on the 12.8 ruling, he refused to return the money from the John School, commenting, well, I think Mr. Hecht benefited from that. Now, if that doesn't show his bias, his belief that he was acting on his basis, that he felt the defendant was guilty, thereby ignoring the presumption of innocence, then I don't know what else would. And so if there is a remand, it should go to somebody other than Judge Casey. And it should really go on remand only on the issue of how much, what's the measure of damages, not on the question of what did you exact, at least with regard to the community service, the community supervision, the John School, the loss of his ability to practice law, and the loss of his 4 years salary as an elected judge. That's what I have, unless you have additional questions.
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.